The driver's seat.
It's McLaren and Ricciardo that win the Italian Grand Prix. Start the celebrations for McLaren.
The driver's seat with Matt McKeldin and Stephen Johnson for Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together.
Welcome to another edition of The Driver's Seat. This seems to be a bit of a habit that I always seem to be stuck in some form of isolation because, yes, we're not live across the nation because it's one of us, hint, the Sri Lankan one, had to get coronavirus. So hello, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Nims Azor, joined, as always, by Matt McKeldin and Stephen Johnson. And, boys, well, how are you guys going?
Well, we're healthy for a start. And Nimsy, we do feel for you because this is your second round of COVID. How does it compare to your first round?
I feel like if I compare it to the quadruple header at SMP, it makes it feel a little bit better. But no, all good. I'm up and about. I'm talking. I'm not in a hossy bed, which is always good. And I'll be out in time to watch Winton on Saturday. So things are looking good. Also, before we actually do get to the Bathurst 12-hour, because I was just reminded, a big thank you to everyone on our Facebook page and all of our socials. A lot of people jumped on board to wish me a speedy recovery, so I do thank you for that. And it does go to show. I said it to you boys earlier. Our audience is fantastic. We've built up a solid one for over 6 years, and it's literally the best audience here in motorsport. So I did want to reiterate that. So thank you for that, all the guys and girls listening to the driver's seat, because you did get involved when we asked your advice about the Bathurst 12-hour, didn't you?
Yeah, they were really good. I mean, we'll talk about the race in just a second, but and if you remember, cast your mind back, folks, to last week's show. I kind of said it was the Clayton's 12-hour, didn't I, Steve? That the 12-hour you're having when you're not having a 12-hour. We knew that it was not going to be the spectacular show that it was in 2017, 2018, 2019, when there was 50-odd, you know, Division 1 cars, Stevie J, where it was just an enormous global intake of GT racing on the mountain. We knew that it wasn't going to be as good, but the general consensus from the feedback, which we'll get to, Nimsy and Steve, is that it delivered more than what we thought. It was, for the amount of cars, and you called it so right, Steve, that we're going to start off with 20. By practice two, we might have about 18. By qualifying, we might have 15, and we'll end the race with about 8. Well, that's kind of what happened. But the race itself, I thought, for the minimal amount of cars that were there, I thought it was actually a pretty good race.
It was a good race, but it was, I mean, we all knew that with what was there and, you know, the strategy that played out, I thought it could have been a much better race. You know, the Audis were fast. They went down a lap fairly early in the piece, and because of the minimal amount of cars, there wasn't many safety cars. You know, there wasn't many incidents. There wasn't many opportunities for those cars that were off the lead lap to get back on the lead lap.
Yeah.
Shane Van Gisbergen and Brock Feeney and the Prince were able to do that after going down early a lap. But, you know, the Audis made some fundamental errors in their, I think, in their strategy, and it was just one of those ones where at the end it was cool watching. Basically, it was really only a two-horse race. SVG's car wasn't fast enough to compete, and, you know, he admitted that quite early on. So, you know, to have those two cars, you know, running around between 7 and 10 seconds apart for the last, I don't know, 2-3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically doing qualifying laps was cool, but, you know, we just missed that wheel-to-wheel ding-dong battle, you know?
But that was always going to be the case. Someone wrote on our Facebook, Nimsy, that how consistent all of the European drivers were. And I jumped on Facebook and I said, yeah, but it's easy to be consistent when you're not racing against somebody. When you're just actually laying laps down, you've got the whole mountain to yourself and away you go. So, look, yeah, it could have been better, but I think genuinely
they could have thrown a safety car late, got the Audi flag back on the lead lap. You know, the Audi was running faster than those three Mercs at the front by quite a considerable margin.
Yeah,
whether he would have been able to pass them once he got to them would have been another story.
Yep.
We might have had another Matt Campbell-esque finish. You know what I mean? And that's what I was hoping for, but you know. And you've got to remember those guys, you know, talking about the Europeans, you know, they're basically driving around in their 15-year-old lounge chair that they've sat in 15 years. They know those cars so well.
Yep.
They might not know the track as well as some of the Aussie drivers, but guys like Mara Engel, those guys, they've done that. They've done Bathurst 1000s. They've done that many 12-hour races. They're very experienced around there. So you can't really say that they're at a disadvantage anymore.
What Mara did you make of Chaz getting pole?
With you, didn't he?
Correct. Mara did in the SP Tools.
In the SP Tools Mercedes-Benz. Erebus Mercedes, yep.
What did you make of Chaz getting pole?
I thought it was great.
What a lap.
Yeah, it was a great lap. But I think what they ended up doing, I think there was a bit of chest puffing out there between Chaz and Kelvin van der Linde in the other Audi, in the same team Audi, but the other car. I think they were given direct orders of what they needed to do or what they should be doing. And every time they went through, one went faster, then the next one went faster, then the next one went faster, then the next one went faster, and so on, to the point where they were that much faster than everybody else. They got a balance of performance adjustment Saturday night for Sunday's race. All right, fellas, you guys are too fast. We'll pull you back. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
So, I think that one was a little bit of a peeing contest between the two of them. Which hurt him in the end, absolutely. Mm. But they were still the fastest car in the race.
I think, Nimsy, one of the things I loved about it was the mountain. Given, remember, normally we do this race in February and we're now May.
Yep.
The mountain played its part, didn't it? The weather, dark early, started early, was threatening
bit
all
fog,
day.
Rain.
Bit of fog, bit of rain. I mean, how good. That's exactly what you want in your Bathurst 1000 or your 12-hour. We're not going to run it next year, Nimsy, in this time frame. They've said straight away, we're going to be back to our normal time slot in February.
And didn't it clash with a bunch of international GT rounds as well?
There was certainly one in Manicourt in France. And so, there was just someone asked on our socials, Nimsy, you know, why did we have so few cars? Well, freight costs and scheduling and driver availability and all that kind of stuff just made it a very difficult proposition.
Because it was on a different date as well.
Yes.
That's what really killed it.
That's what killed it, the rescheduling. But you had to have it because we had to keep the momentum going of the 12-hour because it's just had such a great last few years up until COVID.
Plus, we've missed two.
Exactly right. So if you keep it off for another year, it starts to lose relevance in the global scene. So they had to do it. They had to run it. Great. There's part of me that I'm really happy that an international team won. I know it was sort of being run by Triple Eight, but you know, Kenny Habul, who is an Aussie and does a lot of racing, Jules Gannon, who won it a couple of years ago with Mercedes. With Bentley.
Back-to-back, actually, he went.
That's right. So there's an international team, in my eyes, their international team. They won. So I was really happy with that a local team didn't win. I know that sounds unpatriotic, but it needs to have that international flavour.
Mm.
They need to go back to France and all that and go, well, you know, we still won. We didn't really have any locals in the car. I mean, as I say, Kenny Habul, who owns a property in Mount Panorama, but lives in the United States. In fact, hadn't even seen the property, Steve. He's owned it for 2 years and hasn't even seen it. But I just think, they did what they had to do to keep the momentum of the race going. And then when we get into February next year, hopefully we'll have 50 cars back and it'll be the celebration that it always was. But there was certainly one of our listeners wrote on social that the commentators at the Manicourt round that it clashed with were all talking about the 12-hour and how amazing it is in Bathurst and the results and what a race it was and all that kind of stuff. So still a lot of international froth and bubble about the 12-hour. And I know that Mercedes put in a huge corporate event up there, as they always do. They had the safety car there and they had displays and all that sort of stuff. So they supported it really well. I know you were there. You were doing your drive-through Johnson thing for Toyota 6. How was the vibe? How was the feel down there? Was the crowd looked really good. Was it as good as it looked?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it was good, absolutely. And but you still walked through the pits, and it was, you know, quite empty. And but looking around, you know, the campground was quite full, which was very cool to see. A lot of people were down there, you know, camping out, having a good time. And you know, across the other side of the front straight wasn't, you know, I guess you'd expect that it's not going to be as full as what we've seen it for past 12 hours. But, you know, I think for what it was, and, you know, I think it was definitely above average. And, you know, so it was probably the best word for it would be solid. It was solid for the weekend of what it was.
I think that's a pass mark.
Because I expected
two kangaroos and a blue heeler on the top of the hill.
Yeah, no, that was definitely more than that. That was actually quite a few heads. But the problem with Bathurst is it's so big that you could probably have 5,000 or 8,000 people, and it looks like you've got about 20.
Exactly.
You know, so that's probably where it can be a little bit deceiving.
We had so much response to the 12-hour when we posed the question. You know, what did you think of it? Like there's literally as in the past 24 hours, there's been like 72 comments plus, which is just so much to get through. But two that sort of stood out to me, one was from Kim, who said, "I quite enjoyed it. I admit I didn't get up at 5 a.m. to watch the start or stayed on the couch all day, but I had it on whilst doing stuff around the house and kept a close eye on it. Thought the telecast and commentary team did a great job keeping it interesting, and I found the interviews during the day with Kenny Hibble quite entertaining. I was keen to watch till the end to see if Garth Tander was going to lose his voice completely or not."
And she's dead set right. I didn't get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch the start, Stevie J. There was no way I was going to do that. But one of the great things of KO, you can just sort of fast forward it as you go through and watch it.
I don't think I'll get through this.
That's exactly what Garth was like at the end of it. I think the one of the gold medal efforts has got to go to Richard Crail, Garth Tander, and Matt Nulty, because they called that race for 12 hours. And when you, it's hard enough to call like a 10 lap race with 30 cars in it, let alone, you know, a 12 hour race with 12 cars in it. That they did a really solid job, and it's in those moments you see the real professionalism of them. I thought GT did a great job. You know, he knows what he's talking about. They had, yes, they brought up as many people into the box as they could to make it entertaining. And so I'm a bit like Kim. I didn't watch the whole thing on the couch. I mean, once again, in Queensland, it was raining, so there was not much else I could do. I just buzzed in and out and watched it for as long as I could and watched the finish, for a solid effort, I thought, Nimsy.
Very much so. And Zach even said, "Was the field smaller? Yes. Was there less internationals? Yes. But I still think there was a fantastic endurance race held on Sunday. I think all the criticism aimed at the race is unjustified. I think people need to realize this was a unique 12-hour, and that a unique 12-hour is better than no 12-hour at all. Thought the race had plenty of stories throughout the day. Thought it would have been great to see Van der Linde in the final stages taking on the Mercs. Audi only have themselves to blame for losing that opportunity. Cannot wait for 2023 and a much larger international contingent."
Well, that's what she said.
Pretty much exactly what I said.
That's spot on. Yeah,
it just would have been good to throw something else in the mix there. You know, unfortunately, Shane didn't have the pace. You know, he was 90 seconds off the lead for the most of those last triple stint that he did. Van der Linde was setting purples every lap, but was a lap and a half down. So it just got to the point where we needed that safety car. The Audi needed that lucky dog to get back around. And then, you know, see where they raced after that. But, you know, he is right. You know, we got to understand that this is an interim 12-hour, really.
Yep.
This was a gap year, I guess you'd almost call it.
Yep.
And, you know, to hopefully get back to normal, everyone can plan for next year now. Everyone can plan to have their equipment, cars,
staff,
new cars, bills, staff, everything out in Australia for the February race. It won't be as dark for as long in the morning. You know, obviously the days will be longer in light. And that's another thing. You know, a lot of the guys were carrying on about the darkness at the start and how dangerous it was. And, you know, it's a 12-hour race. I mean,
wasn't any of the internationals that were whinging?
Correct, yeah.
Because they do 24 hours at the Nürburgring, the world's most dangerous and challenging track.
Yep.
And
yet 24 the local hours a day.
Exactly right. A-Rod. Welcome, A-Rod, to the to the broadcast this evening.
I'm not taking away from it. Yes, it would have been difficult. Bathurst, you know, over the top, apart from a couple of car park lights and things, that's all you've got.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they could do a couple of little things, like maybe put some little LEDs on the top of the concrete fences, you know what I mean? So you can at least get your bearings. A lot of the guys, talking to a lot of the guys was actually quite funny, like Reynolds and Will Brown. They were backing off down the straight trying to let each other past because they didn't want to lead. They needed someone to sight to be able to see the walls. So they're going slower and slower and slower, and none of them wanted to pass each other. It was quite funny.
And yet the Euros were absolutely buried to the firewall, throwing it down the road. Unbelievable. Yeah,
exactly. So,
in one of the cars that's going to be here for next year or not, the Theo Kundura Superbarn Audi, do you reckon that'll make a comeback?
Oh, everything's fixable.
Boy, oh boy. Look, if you haven't seen it.
It tested the rev limiter well too.
Didn't it really?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, jump on to Supercars, I think it is, or even on YouTube and type in Superbarn accident at Bathurst. It was the carbon copy of my accident back in November.
Yep.
And they just happened to have a camera sitting on the wall, a camera phone, which I think that's gone to God as well. I don't think that's around, but that was a big hit, and thank goodness he's okay. But he didn't make it back for the race. Do you know the extent of his injuries or why he wasn't cleared?
Yeah, 100%. I know why he wasn't cleared. If you listen to the video quite intently, turn the volume up after he's hit, you'll hear the car screeching down the road, but you'll hear the thing on the rev limiter. Flat out.
Yeah.
And that's because he was knocked out.
There you go.
He was knocked out. So basically it's the concussion rule.
Of course.
You're in the sin bin, Ace. And that's it. So
you're in the sin bin, Ace.
Well, that's
you
what
reckon that was the doctor's.
As soon as the doctor put his head in the window, apparently he said, "You're in the sin bin, Ace."
You're in the sin bin, Ace.
So, all I can say, Nimsy and Matty, is
hello, everybody.
Lucky when he hit the fence, it tore the rear wheel out, and he had no drive shaft there because he would have ended up probably at Skyline, about 100 kilometres an hour faster than he normally would have.
Yeah, right. So, big accident, hey. And it shows you.
And he's good. Like, I spoke to his brother, or Stevie Owen knows them quite well. To his brother the next day, and he's all okay. No dramas from what I understand. Just obviously, luckily that car entered with four drivers in it.
Mm.
So they were able to...
Mm. D-Rust did a great job.
D-Rust did a great job. Able to not have to run Theo. I think it was Theo.
Yeah, it was Theo.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the rest of the three boys could run as a three-driver team. Yep.
Shows you, Nimsy, that part of the track there. When you hit it hard, it's a car breaker and a human breaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wondered why the car went up on the rev limiter. I wondered if you'd been knocked out. So
that car's not going to be in the Team Johnson workshop, being put together by Jet, is it, Steve?
No, not that one.
He's too busy with the two McKeldon cars.
Too busy doing a McKeldon car at the moment.
Or two.
I'm having a drama with both of them, actually. Wonder if the Trans Am gearbox will fit into the MX-5, Matty.
But that was our Bathurst 12-hour wrap-up. We've got a lot to get through here on the driver's seat. As always, we do it thanks to Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together.
This is the driver's seat for Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together.
Welcome back to the driver's seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together. Remember, you can rev up your smartphone with the driver's seat app. It's available in the App Store. And this weekend is the Pizza Hut Winton Super Sprint. And we return to Winton for the first time since 2019. And we're going to be having three 36-lap sprint races, one on Saturday and two on Sunday. A couple of milestones here too, guys. Erebus and Team 18 will both be making their 300th championship race starts in race two of the weekend. Both debuted at the 2013 Adelaide 500. Erebus is the three-car Mercedes-AMG squad, and Team 18 operating as the fourth Tickford car, then, of course, called FPR. Now, there's a couple more records too, because the Shell V-Power Racing Team is poised to become the second team to record 300 podium finishes across its Australian Touring Car Championship and Supercars Championship history. 17 of those belong to you too, Stephen, by the way.
Well, thank you very much, then.
What is it with you and 17?
I don't know.
It's a weird number for you and 17.
Yeah, no, it's just bizarre, isn't it? I don't know where it come from.
Yeah, 17 seasons.
Mm.
17 races here.
Mm.
Wow.
So it's just one. It's serendipity, that's what it is.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, this is the stat that I wanted to bring up to you boys, because Ford has been the dominant market Winton's ever since Car of the Future began in 2013. 9 out of the 17 races held, including the 3 most recent across 2018 and 2019. Fords have also taken the last 7 straight Armour pole positions at Winton, and 10 out of the last 11. We've seen that, well, there hasn't really been a year for Ford in the championship, with SVG and Chaz basically taking all the spoils for the red side of the fence. Do you reckon Ford can fight back at Winton this time around, or are we going to be seeing more of the same?
It's going to be hard, I think. I mean, you know, even though, you know, Shane's just in one of those mentalities, you know, that he's invincible, you know what I mean? And when you get that much confidence and you've got a team that's, you know, got a car that, pardon me, I believe is so good, it is going to be difficult. So and don't forget that it's a track that they don't normally test at. Having Brock Feeney in their team, being a rookie, they were able to do a rookie test day down there recently to get a bit more info on what they need. And, you know, Brockston, and you know that those cars are good. You see how Shane can just turn up the wick at will and go quicker. But when you get a young guy like Brock Feeney, who I think is super talented and is going to be a future champion, to come in, and I think everyone expected Brock, you know, maybe just inside the top 10, just outside the top 10 on occasions, all that sort of thing. But he's come in and he's top 5. He's solid top 5.
Yeah.
And as I said, I'm not taking anything away from Brock's talent. I think he's very talented. But to have a rookie come in and be as solid as he has been from the start, podiums already, I think goes to show how good those cars are.
Can I be controversial?
Of course. That's what you're here for, Matty.
That's what you do.
I don't mind pulling the controversial grenade down there. I'm going to ask you, Stevie J, being the experienced racing driver that you are. I'm not going to ask. I'm going to make a statement. I don't necessarily think Shane Van Gisbergen right now is as good as what everyone thinks he is.
Well, that is controversial.
This is controversial. I know. I might. This place could get burned to the ground for this one. What I think he is outstanding at, and what I think he's done, he has got everyone brain stuffed. He's done some things where he has done some great things in the car. But right now, when Shane gets near anyone, they half jump out of the way. I just think he has got the majority of the field absolutely smashed mentally, because he's done some aggressive bits and pieces, and because it looks like he's got the car on a string, I reckon it's exacerbated now, because I reckon it makes him look so good, but I actually reckon that half the field jump out of his way.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem
wrong?
That way. I don't think that. I think you're wrong in saying that he is an exceptional at the moment. You know, I think he is, and I think he's just getting better, and he's just coming in to his prime in his age and so forth. But I do think, in a way, some of the people he has got, I guess,
got
mentally weak, in a way.
Yeah.
Others, I don't think so. You know, like Cam Waters, I don't think so. I don't think Anton worries about that sort of stuff. He doesn't worry about too much, really. He just gets on with it. you know, people were being critical of him in Perth when Shane passed him in race one at turn one. But it was only because of the aggressive blocking that he was doing that he literally ran in 2 meters too deep and went three quarters of a car too wide, and Shane was able to get up the inside. You know what I mean? So I don't, you know, I think that most of the guys up the front, which I understand, they're racing to win, but they're not racing to win desperately. And I think the difference between what we're seeing at the moment and when Scotty Mack was here and when Ambrose was here racing, I think you saw guys that were winning, but guys that were desperate to just win, not just put a championship together. And you know what I mean? And I think that, you know, you're coming second, third, fourth in the championship, you're too scared to, you know, have a DNF with Shane Van Gisbergen because it's going to ruin your championship. Probably not going to ruin his.
No.
But it's going to ruin yours in a way. So,
and he comes across,
I sort of get it.
He comes across in interviews and everything that he does with almost a, I don't care, an attitude, an I don't care attitude. Not in regards to throwing it off the road, but you know, was that pass fair? Was that bump fair? I don't care.
Yeah.
You get in my way, I'm just going to bump you out of the way. And so when you're a Bryce Fullwood, when you're a Heimgartner, when you're a Percat, when you're whatever, and he comes roaring through the back of the field or through the field or whatever, there's just, you know what it's like when you're in the car. I'm like that with Nathan Hearn. When I race against Nathan Hearn or when I raced against Ryle Harris, I know that if I try and throw a block or if I leave just a smidge amount of room, they're going to stuff it down the inside and fairly knock me off the road. Do it fairly, but they're going to knock me off the road. So more often than not, totally open to admit it with someone like Nathan Hearn, I just get out of their way. I just get out of their way. And there's part of me right now that feels, because everyone in the media, we're all talking about Shane Van Gisbergen, and he's unbelievable, top of his game, all that kind of stuff. I just reckon he's got three quarters of the field bluffed. Yeah. I just do. He is exceptional. Yeah. I'm not saying that. He is clearly exceptional. Just to say that he's not would be stupid. So he's clearly exceptional. I just think mentally he's got it over anybody else in the field.
Yeah, but also you got to race smart too, you know. And you're Bryce Fullwood and Shane's coming from behind you because he's had a bad qualifying or whatever. He's on a different strategy, whatever it might be. There's a time and a place where you need to block for your life. Sure. And there's a time and a place where you probably should just let them through, lose minimal time, and press on, you know, because you block someone for your life for three or four laps.
Well, Shane will have you in the wall,
you know.
Or in the infield.
Or if you hold him up for too long, you're holding yourself up for too long, and all of a sudden, instead of doing 56-second lap times, you're doing 57.5s or 58s over four laps. All of a sudden, you've lost 8 seconds on the road, you know, and that makes a massive difference to your pit strategy later where instead of being in front of those six cars that are coming out of the pits, you're going to be 4 seconds behind them. You know what I mean? So there's a time where you've just got to surrender and go, there's no point in me even blocking him, you know, when I'm in P14. He's going to end up getting up to P5. I'm probably haven't got the car speed for it. Let's just let him through, follow him as long as I can and maybe try to gain an advantage from that. But when you're getting up into the top five, absolutely, you should be blocking for your life. You know, it doesn't matter what sort of time you're losing, especially after the pit stops.
Because Winton will show it this weekend, a little bit like it did in Perth. It's a tight racetrack, right? I think your father described it as running a marathon around your washing line. Your clothesline.
Right. Yeah,
Your heels hoist.
Your heels hoist. If you're an Aussie, heels hoist, right? So it's a place where there's lots of corners to be aggressive with. And I'm going to be watching this weekend. I'm going to be watching to see who genuinely races Shane Van Gisbergen into corners or out of corners and who just flies, you know, throws the white flag and just goes, mate, you're too good. See you later. I'm out of here.
It'll be a very interesting round because Winton is a bogey track for Red Bull Ampol Racing. And
Brad Jones will be quick there. Well, not him personally, but his cars should be. I think Andre will be quick.
You'd think so. You know, it's their home track. They do a lot of testing.
Slatey won races there in a BJR car. Yeah. You know, like
it's that kind of circuit, isn't it? Like it's the sort of circuit where it can throw up an anomaly. It can
BJR
throw up.
Have been strong there.
So that's
the
right. So
when they're not WAU, taking each other out.
WAU test there as well. So there are a lot of home teams there, Nimsy. As I said to you right from the start, whoever the genius was that just thought we'll just schedule Winton in winter, like, thanks for that. Good on you. Appreciate that.
36-lap race, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. We're going to quickly rip through the off-the-track update and we'll get through some loose ends here on the driver's seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together.
And now, it's the driver's seat off-the-track update. Thanks to Burson Auto Parts. Burson, we know auto parts.
Certainly do. We do it thanks to Burson Auto Parts. They're known for first-class knowledge and service. Big news coming out of last week was Matt Stone Racing officially committed to Camaro in 2023.
I think I certainly do not speak on behalf of Matt Stone Racing. However, if I'm the PR guy of Matt Stone Racing, if it were me, if it were Matt McKeldin, I'd be looking back on the PR release that they put out post Ford publicly coming out and saying, we want quality, not quantity. And the knowledge out there that Matt Stone did certainly approach, Matt Stone Racing certainly did approach Ford and got knocked back. They then released a press release that was a bit like...
Which wasn't, what do you call it? It wasn't announced as such, Matty, like that. No. Yes, that, it's known that they have done that, but yeah. They're not like announcing we're going to go and approach Ford. So that then...
No, so then they came out and said, well, you know, Chevrolet's better anyway for us.
I don't like
we kind of don't want Ford anyway. It was kind of like, you know, when you get dumped by somebody and we've all been dumped in our lives and you go, I didn't want her anyway.
You know, like I don't think that necessarily needed to happen, and all it did was make them look like the
jilted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Disgruntled, nose out of joint.
Sometimes you don't give oxygen to any fire. Sometimes you just have to let the fire burn its way out overnight. Mm-hmm. So my personal opinion, and I love the guys at Matt Stone Racing, they're all great guys. And Matt last year, if you remember, Nimsy was the only one who was honest enough to give us an answer on Gen 3. He was fantastic, right? So we love him and we respect him. We love the team. We love what they're doing. But I just think on this instance, I don't think the PR was handled particularly well with that one. They're going with Chevrolet. In fact, Stevie J, would I be right in thinking that the temperature really has always been of the crowd, that they were always going to stay holding? I don't think there was even a thought that they would come across to Ford.
I think it's the Stone link, though, that the fans really wanted to see Stones back with Blue Oval kind of thing.
Yeah, but that's the fans, Nimsy. The reality is no one at Matt Stone Racing, including Ross and Jimmy Stone, ever talk back on their heritage or hark back on their heritage or use it in marketing, you know, the next iteration of Stones or anything. They never do it.
Mm.
So yeah. I get that the fan base gets nostalgic about the old days with Stone Brothers and Ford, but Matt Stone Racing is not the Stone Brothers. It's just not. That's like saying Team Johnson, your team, your family team, yours and Breeze and Jets, is DJR. It's just not.
Mm.
Share the name. I get it. Yep. But it's not. Yeah. So I don't know. I just think it was, I think you're right in what you say, Steve. Just be quiet. Let that one go to the keeper. Don't be the jilted lover. No one, don't be that guy.
No.
No one likes that guy.
No one likes that guy.
Don't be that guy.
But also what he was saying, Nimsy too, just I know we've got to wrap this up, but quickly was, you know, that they're going to get more support, proper support from the factory team, which is Triple Eight. How's that working out for Team 18? How's that working out for teams that are currently under really the same umbrella, you know? You never get the same thing. The only time that the other team got the same stuff is when the other team had the driver that they were going to get in a few years' time, and that was Shane Van Giersbergen at Webbs at Techno.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that wraps up the off-the-track update. We do it thanks to Burson Auto Parts. They're known for first-class knowledge and service. Burson, they know auto parts. Back with more to wrap it all up next on The Driver's Seat.
This is The Driver's Seat for Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together.
Welcome back to The Driver's Seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, shaping and building Australia together. Let's quickly touch on some IndyCar results, because Will Power is now the IndyCar leader as we head towards the Indianapolis 500, which is on the 29th. So Scotty Mack had a real chance to win this race, but I don't want to say he balls it up because the conditions were pretty hectic out there.
Nimsy, that's fair. He balls it up. Under safety car. There's one thing you do as a race driver. It's okay to, if you go off in inclement weather when you're at full racing pace, Stevie J, the one thing you don't want to do is go off under safety car. And poor old Scotty Mack went off under safety car. Super difficult race, inclement weather, changing weather, slicks, wet tyres, red sidewall, black sidewall. It was just a crazy race. In fact, it was one of the races, Stevie J, why I reckon IndyCar is the best open wheel category in the world. It was sensational.
It was so good. And it was great to see. I know, you know, it's very easy to sit in the grandstand or sit on your lounge and go, why didn't you pit? You know what I mean? It could have turned around. He was leading the race. It could have turned around and stopped raining. You know, it's 50-50. But, you know, what a great effort by Will Power to be, you know, he's a changed man this year. He's very consistent, very patient, very calm.
He's not the angry ant.
He's not walking down pit lane, giving the bird to the control tower. So it's awesome. So, you know, I'm loving the Will Power, Scotty Mac up the front this year, and I can't wait for the big one in May.
A touch of Newgarten thrown in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's good.
It was also Colton Herter. There's our ding. We got to wrap this up very quickly. But, Scott McLaughlin, though, still remains third in the points heading to the Indy 500 on the 29th of May. And you got to say, what's the second season called? Because you got your rookie season. Sophomore season, is that it?
Sophomore? Yep. Or sophomore, yeah. Sophomore, junior, senior. So maybe junior.
I'm pretty sure that even he wouldn't have expected to be this far in the points as he is.
No, so. I think you're right, and he's doing very well, and that's why they're protecting him so much and not bringing him back to supercar land for the 1000 because he's in fine form and he's getting his head around how to drive these things, and you don't want to interrupt it from a style-wise or a momentum-wise, and I think that's a very good decision. So I'm loving IndyCar this year. Sensational.
Yeah, part of the wonderful Stan Motorsport package, so make sure you get that.
But
that is it for this week's edition of the Driver's Seat. As always, we do it thanks to Kubota. Together, we are shaping and building Australia. Big round of applause, though, to our man A-Rod on the buttons.
Yes, well done, A-Rod. Thank you, mate. Thanks for stepping in. He's done as very well. You've done great.
That's it for us. We will see you tomorrow. Not tomorrow. We will see you next week on the Driver's Seat. Hmm.